Thank you very much for being here with me this evening. It's a pleasure to be back with Coast to Coast AM. I'll be back with you again in December, the 9th and 10th, and I hope you'll mark it on your calendars and join me as we continue to explore the unusual and fun world around us. Part of what's really driven me in my interest with the supernatural and paranormal are all of the different type of experiences people have had, the different encounters with beings from planets, alternate dimensions, alternate realities from the ether world and beyond. And so many different people, so many different walks of life and religious backgrounds, sexual predilections, colors, races, you name it, and how they are all together by having their own strange encounters. And tonight we've got a really weird story to share with you. We'll do that for the next 2 hours, and we'll open up phone lines if you have encounters of your own that are similar and mirror this encounter, or you'd like to ask questions of our guest. You can be a part of the show next hour when we open phone lines. Michelle Zirkle-Markham is our guest. She's an author from West Virginia who's written about her experience of her home being visited by an evil spirit manifesting itself as water coming from nowhere. The name of the book, Rain No Evil. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about her experiences and how it's affected and impacted her life then and now. We'll do that here on the best in overnight talk radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, filling in for George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Michelle Zirkle-Markham is a graduate of Concord College and Marshall Graduate School, and after teaching high school for 20 years, she resigned to write full-time. Her weekly column can be found every Tuesday in the opinion section of Ohio Valley Publishing Newspapers. The columns can also be accessed on the website rainnoevil.com. Michelle Zirkle-Markham is our guest for the next 2 hours as we talk about her very strange encounters with a supernatural force. Michelle, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thank you for inviting me, Dave.
Michelle, prior to this experience, had you ever had anything that you would consider to be paranormal in your life?
No, not exactly. I grew up Pentecostal, so I had seen what I remember as being from a child. I was 7 years old, a lady who had an exorcism at the house, at the church, but that was all.
How did that impact you when you saw something like this? How old were you?
Well, I was only 7 years old, so from a seven-year-old's memory, of course, it's rather fuzzy. But I do remember the lady running in the church, and I do actually discuss that in my book because I remembered her running in and all wild and crazy, and people gathering around her and praying for her, and
was
her
this
seeming to respond to that. And
was this during the service itself?
Yes, it was.
And she just burst in, acting wildly. Was she screaming, crying, speaking in tongues? What type of experience was it?
No, she wasn't speaking in tongues, but we did go to a church that did. She was, from what I remember, she was just screaming, and her hair was all crazy, and I don't remember much more about it other than all the deacons and church members were gathering around her, praying for her, and the preacher anointed her head and basically cast the spirit out. And she did seem to change her whole demeanor after that, but that is the only sort of encounter of any magnitude as what I'm dealing with in my book.
When that occurred, and this demon is expelled from her in a quick flash of emotion and anointing and prayers that are being laid out on this woman, was there a physical response? Could you feel like a palpable energy in that location when something like that happens?
Now, if I'd have been older, I may have been able to do that, but at the age that I was, no, I did not. As a matter of fact, the younger children were sent to the basement. they didn't want them to catch anything, you know.
Right, I guess they didn't want it deflecting into one of you.
Right.
Did you talk to your parents about that after the fact, or was it very hush-hush and let's not talk about that?
I don't remember talking about it, but I know that my family was very open and the members of the congregation were. So if I had mentioned it after that, I'm sure they would have been very open in the discussion.
All right, so that was your only... Right. That was your only strange encounter as kind of a sideline witness to something like this. Now, as an adult looking back after you've dealt with what you've dealt with, do you see now signs that maybe were a part of your life all along?
As far as that there might have been something in my life?
Right, that the supernatural may have been around you more than you realized?
Absolutely, yes.
All right. Well, let's start to experience this encounter. What year did this take place for you, Michelle?
This actually took place in 2006.
Okay, 2006. Walk us through a little bit of your life at that point. What was going on in your world?
Well, I was teaching high school at Point Pleasant High School, where the Mothman, of course, is notorious for actually just having been seen last week, the most recent sighting. But I was teaching high school. My husband was a police officer. We had been married for about 16 years at that time. We were high school sweethearts and trying to make our marriage work. And we were both being unfaithful in trying to do that, trying to be happy. And that was pretty much where I was in my relationship with my husband.
So you've got this kind of strange dysfunctionality going on in your home.
Absolutely. We did love each other, but it just we were trying to make it work, and we would come back and from various encounters with other people and, you know, move on from there, seemingly so, and it just wasn't working.
I've heard some strange things about people that have had multiple infidelities, and some of them believe that they may have picked up an evil force from these lovers, from these people. Do you, now looking back, do you think that that may be a part of what infected your lives, either through what your husband was doing or what you were doing?
I absolutely know now from my experience that the portal, there are various portals, and absolutely one of those is sex. And I'm not saying it has to be, but in this case, it absolutely was. It was a portal for that to come through. I'm not sure that it directly came from the other people involved, from the lovers, if you will. But it was definitely a portal into my life.
Were there drugs or alcohol involved in your life during this kind of breakdown as well?
Actually, there were never drugs. My ex-husband or I, either one, got into that. But drinking was involved on my part, yes.
Okay.
And that is another portal.
Right, yeah. I mean, we've certainly heard that as well. Now, with your drinking, was this something that was gradual, or was it a strange turn of the key, almost like your personality changed and dictated that you needed alcohol?
I think I was escaping, as most people that probably have an alcoholic problem I would say do. That's why I was using it, was to escape the unhappiness and trying to find happiness, which was, it seemed like a never-ending quest for me.
All right, so you had this up. Now, was there, was this a slow, gradual buildup between the drinking and the infidelity, or was this kind of something that just, boom, all of a sudden you just found yourself in the midst of it?
No, it really was rather gradual. It's kind of like you're gaining weight, you know, a little bit at a time, and it just erodes at you. And that's certainly how it happened with me. You know, one more drink at a time, one more illicit affair at a time, and still trying to fill that emptiness, that there was a void and it wasn't being filled irregardless. But you think that maybe more, maybe just a little bit more will help. And it does. It didn't for me.
Did you ever feel like you were being driven by an external force? I mean, a voice telling you these things that made you feel like, this isn't where I want to be, this isn't who I want to be? And not that voice of consciousness that we all hear, that little nagging angel on one shoulder and the little devil on the other, but I mean like a different consciousness altogether trying to lead you down this path.
I did often wonder why I had such various, I would call them, for me, a mood swing, but I wasn't a very moody person. So when I would do something with a a person I wasn't supposed to when I would have an affair, I would have this very, like you said, it wasn't just remorse. It was almost like a complete switch in identity. That's how I would describe it. Like, what did I do that for? Why was I, you know, was that really me? And I absolutely do believe that that was real. It wasn't just something now I know that was in my imagination.
Were there specific times that you noticed this pull to be stronger? You know, certain evenings over other evenings? Would it only come after, you know, drinking and kind of opening that aspect of yourself?
No, it didn't have to accompany drinking at all. The drinking just seemed to, I guess, make me a little more comfortable with the situation sometimes. But no, it did not have to accompany drinking at all. It just really was pretty much spurred on by the relationship that I was having with my husband, and the comments and things that he would make to me would cause me, and I'm not making excuses for my behavior, I'm just saying that that was the reason. When someone makes you feel bad and you're hurting, you're going to find a way to comfort yourself, to soothe yourself, whether it is appropriate or whether it's something you would normally, under normal circumstances, do or not. And that's what I was doing. I would be hurt, and I would try to relieve that pain by going out with someone else.
Now, did you find that this was happening to both of you simultaneously, or had one begun this dark journey long before the other?
Actually, this was happening to both of us, and we did actually come clean with each other at various times throughout our marriage. And like I said, there was an underlying, obviously, an underlying love of some sort there. Some people I know would question that. Well, how can you do that if you really love someone? But there are many people out there who I believe would understand that and would relate to that, because there was an underlying love there, and it nevertheless happened.
Now, the reason I ask this, and I'm certainly, you know, listen, we're human. We're capable of making stupid decisions, bad choices, all on our own, that has absolutely no effect with the realm of the demonic or paranormal. And as a matter of fact, I'm not a big fan of people that put it on the crutch of the paranormal. However, I've also heard from people that, you know, they have a move or something. And had you just moved into this house when things started to go poorly in your relationship, or had you been there for quite some time before this disconnect?
No, we had actually lived in a house before the house was involved in the story, and things had already went awry way before we moved in this house. And the events that happened in the house happened 8 years after we moved in. So we did not move in a, quote, haunted house at all.
All right, so that wasn't the case. And the reason I ask that is I've heard really disturbing stories, Michelle, of some people that have, you know, going along great, they have a fantastic relationship, they buy this new house, and suddenly, almost like it portrayed in the Amityville Horror case, people's personalities begin to change immediately, almost as if there's something there manipulating their energy. And in some cases, we've heard of people that pick up an attachment, and whether it's out at the bars or casinos or, you know, just places where you might kind of have that low energy hauntings that exist, you know, that it starts to affect in an interfere with you. And it's like I said, that's what I was trying to get an idea of, this if this was a slow, gradual progression, or was it just a quick descent into darkness and madness on both of your parts?
No, it was absolutely a slow ride into an abyss, for sure. And it was not anything directly related to this house until we moved in. And I'm convinced that wherever we had been at the time would have had this manifestation of this water.
All right. So you've got this negativity going on in your own lives, this dysfunctionality, which we found in a lot of cases. You know, I was brought in on a case about 6 years ago in New York, and this family was having a lot of paranormal activity taking place and a lot of very bizarre poltergeist-like activity. And we started doing a walkthrough investigation just to kind of familiarize ourselves with the lay of the land. And we saw this strange disconnect between the husband and wife, between the husband and children, And in every room, adult and child, there was alcohol bottles and half-empty alcohol bottles. And we saw that there was this, you know, strange dysfunctionality going on there, and wondered if this was part of the catalyst that was creating this archaic kind of psychokinetic manifestation. So at what point do things start to go from just a marriage dissolving because of poor choices on both of your parts into something more supernatural in nature?
Well, first of all, I do want to say that I do think another part, a component to this, is that certain careers, that people in certain careers are around that element, like you were talking about, the more lower vibrating people and the denser, I guess you'd say, world, and are more susceptible to picking up these attachments. And my husband was a police officer, and they are dealing with that element every day. And it wears on them, and I saw that personally, and that is part of the story, is that that was a something that he was dealing with. And it was unbeknownst, of course, to us at the time, but I see now that that was part of the disintegration.
And he was a police officer. Just out of curiosity, had he ever had to engage a perpetrator, shooting or something along those lines that may have brought an attachment to him?
He never had to actually shoot anyone. He was very active in very hostile situations, I will just say that. It was not your average just daily pulling someone over. He was very involved and active in many types of investigations involving drug stings, hostage situations, child neglect, and especially child sexual assault really, really bothered him. He was a very, very caring person with that type of thing, and that bothered him more than anything. And I saw this with him, how, you know, it affected him, you know, how, of course, it's stressful, heck, you know, teaching is stressful for that matter, but it was stressful in a different way because, I don't know, and I think people deal with it differently. And his way of dealing with it was to, you know, see that justice was served, and he was very good at that. But that was the type of crimes that he worked.
All right. Very disturbing type of trend in this relationship that's opened up, and certainly chinks in the armor where negative influence can have more of a power, more of a hold and grasp over you. If you believe in the paranormal and believe in the things that demonologists, exorcists have told us, the people with alcohol problems, sexual addiction problems, these openings in their auric protection seem to become ripe for attachments, for hauntings. And was the activity that they were doing opening themselves up even deeper for what was to come? We'll continue talking with our guest as we discuss this case, Michelle Zirkle Markham, our guest this evening, and find out what took place. How did the manifestations begin? And at what point did she realize this was going to be something way over her head? We'll discuss that and more. And again, we'll open up phone lines next hour if you have questions for our guest or your own encounters that mirror what she had or any insights into what it was that she was dealing with. We'd love to hear from you. We'll do that next hour. And remember, if you've missed any part of tonight's show and you'd like to catch up, it's very easy. Become a Coast Insider by going to coasttocoastam.com. Become a Coast Insider, get a one-year subscription for 15 cents a day and get all the access to the last 5 years of shows and more exclusive content there. For George Norrie, I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Did you know George Norrie not only has one of the most famous and well-heard radio shows in the world, but he's also the host of a TV series, Beyond Belief. You can find information at beyondbelief.com, high-definition streaming video where you can hear and see some of the great and fascinating topics that you listen to on Coast to Coast AM. You get a chance to hear from the experts on every aspect of every topic that we cover here on Coast, and check it out for yourself. It's fascinating, educating, and entertaining, always available to you. You can find more information at beyondbelief.com. Com. And let me remind you, the holidays are right around the corner. You've got Christmas, New Year's, and Valentine's all within a stone's throw away. And why spend that time alone? Why waste one more minute of our precious time being alone when it's so simple to find somebody that shares your same thoughts, your same interests? If you listen to Coast AM, then you need to sign up for ParanormalDate.com or ConspiracyDate.com. Find people like-minded, just like you, that are seeking the love of their life, friends, and more. Who knows, you may find your new best friend, and it's as simple as signing up for a membership to ParanormalDate.com. There are hundreds and hundreds of amazing connections that have already been made. Why not make that a part of your world? Manifest your own destiny and make a change in your life. You don't have to be alone anymore. You don't have to wonder if there are people out there that are fascinated by the same topics. All you have to do is go check out ParanormalDate.com and get the answers right there. Over 50,000 members, and your future may be waiting just by visiting the website. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Michelle Zirkle Markham is our guest. We're going to talk about her very unique and strange haunting, and we'll open up the phone lines next hour. If you have questions or your own stories you'd like to share with us, we'll do that at the top of next hour. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. All right, Michelle Zirkle Markham, our guest. Her book is called Rain No Evil. We've heard about what led up to this moment. Walk me through, Michelle, how this began with the supernatural aspect of your story, and what was the catalyst to start this bizarre encounter?
Okay. As I had mentioned before, I was in this marriage with my husband for 16 years, and there was a lot of verbal abuse going on, which I did not identify at the time. We get in this huge fight, and I go and get in the shower, and I just basically let God have it. I'd grown up in church, as I mentioned, and I was just angry. I was angry with God, blamed him for not fixing my marriage, and told him that he had to prove to me that he was real. And prove to me that he is real, he did, through the series of events that happened next.
All right, so your thought on this is that you're in this position, you're in a bad place, things are not where you want them to be. Your thought is to challenge God, to ask the Almighty to prove to you that he is there and that he cares.
Right, because I'd been praying, okay. I'd been through all of this, through all of the affairs, everything. I had maintained going to church, so had my husband. So we're going to church on Sundays, we're screwing around through the week. And I know that's not ideal, but of course it happens every day. But for me, I felt like my prayers were not being heard. And I'm sure that they were now, but I needed some proof. And, you know, I would encourage everyone to ask for a sign if you need it. If you need a sign, it's not a bad thing. Even the wise men needed a sign. They followed the star to find Jesus, or they wouldn't have found him. So I asked for my sign, and I followed it. And ironically, when I was in the shower is when I prayed this prayer. So 3 days later, there is water that drops on my older son's head. He's 12 years old. We have a 7-year-old at the time. So we have two boys in the house and us, my husband and I. And the older son walked downstairs, said that there was a drop of water dropped on his head. Well, an hour later, another drop. We thought the kids were goofing off. So, obviously, we, what are you doing? You know, why are you doing this? Before the night was over, water was spraying like an invisible water hose through our living room. It would, through the course of 2 weeks, this went on. So water would literally, imagine someone walking in your house. They turn the water hose on jet, and they spray it. So it's spraying across the room with force, and you look around, and there is no water pipe sticking out of the wall. There is nothing that shows where this came from. It made no sense, but I did not initially realize that this was tied to the prayer. So I know that sounds crazy now, but in hindsight, everything. It just looks very clear. But
well, Michelle, how is it clear that in the state of your life and where you're at, when you ask God for a sign, He starts sprinkling your children? Why them? Why not? You know, why not give you a hose
well,
to
I
the
don't
face?
Know why.
You know?
All I know is that I said the prayer in the shower, which was obviously water, and I know that 3 days later that water was spraying inside of my house. And I do believe it was tied to the prayer because, as I mentioned before, we had lived in this house for 8 years, and nothing like this had happened. We had not had any issue like this. Well, this went on for 2 weeks. Water would spray across the room. In every room in a two-story house, it would bust the light bulbs because we had the bulbs that just were, you know, above and overhead lights. It would set off the fire alarm. We would mop it up. It wasn't a continual stream. It was literally a spray. And my kids started seeing apparitions, like eyeballs floating, Grim Reaper, hands pressed through the wall, heartbeats on the wall, many, many things started going on in the house at this time.
What do you mean heartbeats on the wall? You would hear thumping noises like a heartbeat?
A heartbeat, actually, my youngest son saw a heartbeat it was a heart that was on the wall. And when he described heartbeat, I initially thought that's what he meant because I didn't see it. He described it as his grandma had been in the hospital and he had visited her. He did the zigzag lines like on the monitor. So what he had seen was like a heart, and then he had seen, and he drew it for me, the up and down lines, like a heartbeat on a monitor in a hospital. And he went to make the sign of the cross, because we had had Father come and do a blessing at the house. This was over a course of 2 weeks, and Father had given him the holy water. And when he went to make the sign of the cross, the heartbeat went away. And he said a cross appeared there, where that was on the wall. But that was what my youngest son saw. But this did go on for 2 weeks. And when I realized what was going on, part of me realizing that was I saw a demon in my mirror, myself. And it was still to this day the scariest thing that I have ever experienced. And it was more real than me being here right now talking to you on the phone.
All right. Well, explain that situation to us. What were you doing, and then what was it like to see this, and what was the description of this being?
I had went to sleep. I had an out-of-body experience. I've never had one like that before. I was instantly out of my body. I looked back and saw myself on the bed. I was sitting in a stool in front of my dresser mirror in my bedroom. My head was down, and in my peripheral, I could see white beings around me. They were somehow telling me without I didn't hear the sound, but it was like a telepathic telling me to raise my head, and I knew that whatever I was going to see was going to be the scariest thing that had ever happened to me. I knew it, and I had to do it anyway. I had no choice. I looked up, I looked in the mirror, and it was my face, but it was also a demon's face that was like superimposed over mine. And there were scars in my face, big, deep, charcoal scars. They looked crispy. They looked charcoaled. It looked like my face was carved like a pumpkin. And my head was, I'll never forget it. I even if I get Alzheimer's, I don't think I could forget this. It just shook me to the core. My head was tapered, to the left in a wave, like almost like a wave of a flame or something. I could see through my arms. I could see through. I mean, all this happened in an instant. You know, like when an accident happens, people say, you know, everything just, it happens either slow motion or whatever. I remember that it was slow motion, but the instant I looked up and I saw that, my face in that mirror, and I was looking at me. But I was also looking into the eyes of a demon. I it was just like being pushed off a cliff. You didn't want to go. You had to go anyway. And I was instantly back on my bed and crashed back into my body. I sat up. I screamed out, and I, of course, asked my husband, woke him up. I said, "Did you just hear me get up? Did you just hear me get up?" I was in shock. And he, of course, "No, no, I don't know what you're talking about." I actually laid there and prayed out loud in the middle of the night because I was that scared. I rebuked Satan. I did everything I'd learned to do growing up and, you know, to get that, prayed for protection. I felt better about it, but I knew with that and all the things that the kids were seeing, this water, it just, I knew that there was a demon in the house. And I also had a revelation of that. I was at school. I was teaching high school. I was on planning period. And I was praying again, and God told me that there was a spirit in the house. And he told me there was nothing I could do. I wasn't the one in control. So that's why we involved a priest. We had never been Catholic. When I told my husband that there was a demon in the house or an evil spirit in the house, and I do think we had more than one thing going on there. I don't think it was just, there were too many different things that we were seeing. Besides the demon, my youngest son was seeing all sorts of things. So I do think we possibly had a poltergeist or some other activity there. But when I told my husband there was something paranormal going on in this house, he thought I was crazy. And he never grew up in the type of churches that I did. And so Father came to the house the first time, and my husband left. It was me, my dad, and the boys were there. And the priest did a house blessing two different times because he was very conservative, and he did not want to jump to conclusions that there was something actually evil there. And when it did not help anything, he came back the third time, brought the body of Christ with him, and there was a last splat in the hallway in the same exact location that the first drop of water dropped in the hallway, right upstairs in the middle of the hall. It went right back through that portal.
And this is witnessed by the priest at this point.
Oh, yeah.
So this isn't just exactly something that's going through you. Okay. Now, had the priest assessed you mentally? Had you thought maybe you were losing your mind and sought counseling or help about what was going on?
Did I seek help? No, I just called the priest and asked because I had a couple friends suggest the priest. Actually, my preacher, I called my preacher first, a Protestant preacher who had known me for years. He married me. He knew me from the time I was little. And, I mean, he knew I wasn't crazy. He just said, "I don't know what to, I have no, let me just, for the record, I have no history of mental illness, anything like that." And none of this went on before, none of this went on after. It was only for this period of time. And I was not the only witness to this. We had neighbors stopping. As you can imagine, you know, I'm a teacher, police officer, small town. People were coming up to me at kids' ball games. "What's going on at your house?" You know, the kids at school knew. People at church knew. But my preacher told me, "You're going to have to call a priest." So that's what I did. And
wait, so your preacher...
Yes.
His response to this experience is, "You need somebody else. You need a Catholic priest to help you." Was
yes.
that a little disheartening that here you've got a man of the cloth from your church, and he's just saying, "I'm not prepared for this. This is nothing I can do."
Exactly. And that's why I actually stopped. It wasn't just him, but I thought, if I can't go to my preacher with this spiritual need, and it wasn't that he didn't believe in spirit, but there's a lot of churches that in theory believe in spirit, but then when you go to them, and there's a scene in the book where I walk in and I hadn't slept all night. I didn't have any makeup on. I don't even think I brushed my teeth. And I walk in and I tell the secretary at church, at this Protestant church that I'd went to since I was little, and I look at her and I asked for the preacher. He was gone, she said, and I said, "Well, I have a spirit in my house." She just looked at me like I was asking her to write Arabic or something for this message. And I know it's funny, but the book is actually funny. I have an odd sense of humor, and that comes through in the book. That's why on the back the publisher says it's wickedly funny. I do have an odd sense of humor, and I'm glad I do because it did help me through this period of time for sure. The priest, thank goodness, was able to help me. He had to get permission from the diocese in order to do that. I have had many people tell me since then that is not the case in many places. There's at least two places in Ohio that there have been people that have called the priest in Ohio, and they have been told, since they are not Catholic, they cannot help them. And I thank God every day that that was not the case for us.
When you call this priest and you tell him my pastor is not willing to help, I need your help, what was his response?
Well, like I said, this was a small area, small town, and he knew the preacher that had referred me, and he at first wanted to do the house blessing. He said, I don't want to jump to conclusions. He was very conservative, and I said, that's fine. So he came and he did the house blessing, and that did not help. So he came back again and did another house blessing. He even walked around the perimeter of the house and did the blessing, but it didn't help. So that's why he ended up coming back the third time with the body of Christ and doing this. And I will say, there's one bit before the priest got there, we were calling contractors. We had upwards of 50 people through our house in the meantime, trying to figure out where this water was coming from. We had plumbers. We had heating and cooling people. We had just general contractors. I called the insurance company. They sent out people. They wanted us to turn the water off and the electric off in the house. And I said, well, you don't understand. We're living in it. And she's like, well, how are you living there? And I said, well, it's not a continual, like, flooded area. They're used to disasters. So she said, okay, you can leave the electric on, the power on, and we'll come out. So there was a team of three people that came. They come through the house. The houses, the windows are steamed up. It actually looks spooky and eerie because the windows are steamed up. And you can tell that the house has moisture in it. They get out one of these contraptions, some sort of device. They sat on the wall, and it measures dampness back into the wall. I don't know how many inches, but several. And again, it's for places that are prone to this water, and they're trying to find a leak, and they can't find it. So that's what this device is for. The guy sits it on the wall. He looks around at the other guys, and he says, can't be right. He said, this is measuring zero. And he said, there's obvious water. I mean, there were stains on the walls where we had to paint the whole house after this because the walls were just, there were stain marks all around on the walls where water had ran, even though it wasn't necessarily a puddle of water there anymore. So it didn't make any sense. But the guy looks at me and he says, you have something paranormal going on here. And that was at the point, I mean, I already knew that at the point they had gotten there. I was letting contractors come that we'd already called just to appease my husband, because he said, this is crazy. And like I said, the priest was coming back and doing these blessings, and they weren't helping. And so we were just kind of trying everything. We were trying everything. And thank goodness, when they actually did the final exorcism, that was what helped. When it went splat back through the portal where it came through in the hallway, it was gone.
That was it then. Once it went through there. What a strange experience. We're up against the break. So my question is, and when we return, we'll discuss this aspect of it more. When you call out to God asking for a sign that he's there, that he cares, that he's there with you, and suddenly this strange force starts to take over, demonic entities in your mirror and feeling like you've been possessed. Why? Why would this be the sign that God would give to you? Is he giving it to you because it is, he's showing you what it's like to not have his love and protection? Is he stripping it from you, and this is what you can expect to happen if... Well, hold on. I want to talk about this when we come back after the top of the hour. So we'll discuss more of this when we come back. Michelle is our guest for the next hour, and we'll take your calls. If you have questions, insights, or your own encounters that mirror this, we want to hear from you. I'm Dave Schrader. This is Coast to Coast AM.